I would somehow maybe like this topic to be discussed more with Bettina, because she already mentioned this question. This is the question of video document musealization, historization, and also video document and question of commodification and market piece. So when Marina Abramović was having her performance in Cankaryo Dom in Ljubljana in the late 80s, called Biography, already she was incorporating some, we could say, short pieces of her early performances from the period when she was still working in Belgrade. And at that time already I had some questions and doubts, namely the resistance against the established system of art, typical for conceptualist art practices, was almost without exception condemned to marginalization or resulted in its general acceptance and agreement with its mechanisms, including musealization. Here we should raise the issue of the video document and its usage. How can something performed live in front of an audience in real space and in real time, involving a special relationship between the artist and the audience and the real duration? In other words, performance art as one of the most radical art practice, how can it be presented with the available documentation, photography or video? What does it lose and what can it gain? The question concerning the nucleus of conceptualist practice of this kind, the dematerialization of an art object with a potential market value, and the performance resistance towards historization, sometimes even before recording the documentation and especially before viewing it, will be left aside here due to the time distance. This is also due to the fact that the artist's utopian effort to avoid the functioning of the system of art and market mechanisms is as a rule condemned to failure, and in retrospect appears only as a short-term naive belief. This should not mean, however, that such a standpoint is not a significant base for a certain value and reflection. Nonetheless, it appears that it was video next to less attractive static photographs which made the commodification of what had passed possible. The fact that the conceptualists themselves, along with many other rising artists, proliferated from this short period when attempts were made to deprive society of material works of art, seems from this perspective quite just. Finally, it was this artist, conceptual artist, who brought about the increased demand and higher prices in the market due to the rarefaction of artworks.
I mean, I cannot give really a clear answer to this question, but maybe some observations from our process also gathering this video archive, and also the paradoxes in doing an exhibition about performance art, which means somehow also to bring that kind of practice, which you could say left the museum, left the institution, back into the institution, which is somehow paradoxical. And in a way, what we didn't want to contribute in a way to institutionalization of performance art, but rather proposing something like, I don't know, a living archive. And that's why we linked it so much to live performance, to reenactments, etc. But somehow I think as soon as you have documents, traces, etc., automatically it's something that can circulate in an art market, and it does circulate. And I mean, from the beginning on, I think, because of course before video there was, and also parallel to video, there was a lot of photographic documentation, and some of those photos were also produced intentionally to have at least something that could be sold or I mean, yeah, bring some income to the artist. And I think it's a contradiction, it's hard to escape. But on the other hand, there's also, of course, an interest to have some access to the history and to be able to learn about certain practices. I always give one, for me, really interesting example of a performance group that I came across by chance, which was active in Belgium, I believe in the 70s maybe, called Mass Moving. And they were really interdisciplinary collective. They did a lot of political action publicly in the public space. They were really an environmentally engaged group. They were linked, you could say, to Fluxus and a lot of avant-garde movements, but they were not even interested in art as such. They were interested in stimulating change in the urban environment, in bringing people together to reclaim the city, etc., etc. What they did is they did an action of auto-da-fé in the late 70s when the group, kind of due to different reasons but also internal struggle, decided to dissolve. So they have decided to destroy all traces and material because they were really opposing the art world, the art market, and didn't want to leave objects that could then circulate. Although I think in the group they had slightly different ideas about that, but this was the official decision and most of the stuff was destroyed. But then they all live still in Belgium, and an art historian who probably knew them from the time at a certain point was interested to still trace this history and talk to each of them, and each of them still had a little bit here and there, some photo, they did like Fluxus, like very beautiful cards to invite people to public actions. So there were some little traces here and there, and then she did in the end, with agreement of the artist, an exhibition. And somehow, I mean, I was really happy to learn about this work, which actually is not present at all in, I mean, the art historical books I know about the period and all about Fluxus happening. You don't find anything about them, actually, because of their conscious choice, which is also legitimate and interesting. But still, I was happy in the end to learn something about them. So somehow it's a contradictory field. I also don't have a clear answer. I mean, one experience from collecting this video archive is, of course, that I think as soon as artists would agree on distributing the material copyright free or under alternative licenses, I think that would be a step to not play into the whole notion of the art market and commodification of the material, because still, of course, it's really hard to get access to a lot of this video material that's also now in the archive. One has to pay high rental fees. There are even really, I mean, paradoxical and ridiculous cases where, although, of course, video today digitalized on a DVD, it's really a medium that is in itself a copy of a copy. But still, what happens often is then often the galleries distribute the material that they try to turn the video into a classical artwork and an original artwork. They produce limited editions so that there are only four originals of this or that video, and then it's treated, and then the whole machinery starts of treating this video, which in itself is a copy of a copy of a copy, to treat it as an artwork. And this is, for me, an example where it becomes really, I mean, yeah, absurd somehow, and where the possibility of the medium of really freely disseminating work and making it accessible is turned ad absurdum.
Yeah, it is this story, you know, with the original kind of how video as media was understood, like being the promised democratic media. And also performance was taught not to produce products, objects. So then, you know, also in the 70s, it all ended up in the gallery spaces. And now they are back to gallery spaces, so it's like but I think for later, I mean, there was not such a feeling of the artists themselves, because I'm speaking from the point of the artists. Mm-hmm. They were saying, no, I don't want to. So this documentation was only for them, whatever, but not for the market. Educational usage is very important, of course. Mm-hmm.